Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
I'm caught up in the game. My attention is on every play and every whistle. But what I'm missing is a signal coming from my kidneys. That signal isn't like a ref's whistle. It's more of a silent SOS, which could be warning me of an increased risk for events like heart attack or stroke. And a way I can catch that signal? A simple urine test called UACR. If you have type 2 diabetes or high blood pressure, talk to your doctor about the UACR test. Detect the SOS. Visit detectthesos.com to learn more.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
6:15 now on this Thursday morning, December the 11th. About 47 degrees if you average your temperatures throughout the areas. Highs of 63 today. Then it warms up, 73 for highs tomorrow and Saturday, so you'll have the shorts out. But then again, on Sunday, you'll have the cold weather gear out. Highs Sunday, only 61 after a start in the 30s. And then Sunday night, Monday morning, really cold. Maybe a freeze, lows around 32, highs of 48. And then 60 heading into the rest of the week. It warms into the 70s, and we'll see what happens for Christmas. Still too early yet with some, 14 days, 2 weeks left to go. Stephen Cage joins us now, BankRate Senior Financial Analyst, talk about the Fed and what they did as far as interest rates go. Good morning, Stephen. How are you?
I'm good. Good morning.
Tell me, the Fed cut the rates, but it's divided. Tell me what's going on there.
So we got a quarter-point rate cut. That was largely expected, and the Federal Reserve did deliver, but there's division within the committee. We had more dissent now than we've had since September of 2019. One member voted for a larger rate cut, and two voted for no rate cut at all.
So, what explain the makeup of the Federal Reserve for me, so people know. Are people representing different districts? Or are they representing different trains of thought as far as economic theories? Tell me how that can break down.
So there's 12 voting members, and part of those members that vote are consistent on every meeting. That's the Fed Board of Governors. And then there's regional presidents from the 12 different, from the regional Federal Reserve banks across the country. You've got Boston and New York and St. Louis and San Francisco and others. And they rotate and join the committee to vote. And so you do have different people with different opinions, different outlooks on what should be done. And that's why, there's often, a lot of consensus building from the Federal Reserve chair. And now Jay Powell has been very good at that. But now we're seeing that dissent and sort of division and disagreement is certainly coming to the forefront. And that's something that's relatively new for the Federal Reserve. but it demonstrates that people are voting their conscience. They're voting what they think and not simply just falling in line, which to me is a good thing.
Yeah. So do they meet beforehand and have phone calls beforehand and kicking around? I'm always interested in the process of these kind of things where it's like, well, you know, Fred, I'm thinking about cutting it. And the other one says, well, I'm thinking about raising it more. Well, no, if you look at the quarterly this or the that or the other thing, or do they just reveal it when they meet?
There's certainly a lot of discussion behind the scenes. These are fairly wonky people that are discussing economic theory and papers, and you know they're involved in a lot of that discussion a lot of the time. The meeting lasts for 2 days, so Tuesday and Wednesday, and that's when really a lot of the discussion probably heats up. But at no point are they really cut off from one another to discuss that before, during. Or certainly after, those discussions continue. Even now into January, we'll have another meeting in January. There's going to be constant discussion about what's going on, especially because we're going to get more economic data next week to fill in the gaps from the government shutdown.
Is there one rate here that we're talking about, or do they tell me exactly what they cut?
So the federal funds rate is what controls it informs a lot of the interest rates that consumers are going to see. And so revolving credit rates like credit cards, home equity lines of credit, those are going to move, not necessarily in lockstep or, overnight, but will start to drift over the next 1 to 2 billing cycles for those who have those kind of debts or carry balances. Those are going to be informed by what the Fed does. It largely impacts savings accounts, high yield savings accounts, CDs. And so those are things that consumers are going to notice. And they're going to see that coming over the next few weeks and few months. Rates like mortgages are less impacted.
Well, see, that's a question I had, because it seems like when it comes to credit cards, and I'm not trying to be cynical here, but 20%, does it really matter? But when it comes to a home loan, it's everything, right? Or am I making stuff up in my head?
No, you're right. I mean, it's helpful to see credit card interest rates come down, but to go from 21 to 19 or 20 to 18, it is not life-changing. That's not going to suddenly solve your problem if you're carrying a balance. You still have to make meaningful effort to pay that down. But for mortgage rates, which are not really controlled directly at all by the Federal Reserve, a drop in rates would be hugely meaningful for anybody who wants to buy a home and anybody who wants to refinance. We're not necessarily going to see that. Mortgage rates have been more steady. There's really no prediction as to whether they're going to go up, down, or sideways. We're just going to have to watch and wait and see.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Stephen Cates, Bankrate's financial analyst, about the Fed deciding to lower rates again, but it's not going to really affect mortgages, credit cards, and things like that. We'll pick it up. 620 traffic now, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Stephen Cates, Bankrate financial analyst, on this Thursday morning, talking about the Fed deciding to cut rates. It would seem to me that if you're going to really help the economy, rather than making an inconsequential change between a 20 and 19% interest rate on credit cards, that if you look at housing starts, if you look at all the things that building a house or buying a house generates in the economy, and I guess you do have an inflation concern, but I was just wondering about what would the Fed have to do to cut interest rates for those that are listening and either want to refinance or want to get in and buy a home?
Well, there isn't a whole lot the Federal Reserve can do to make mortgage rates lower outside of buying mortgage securities themselves. And that's really just not something that they're willing to do.
So what is it that drives that? What drives mortgage rates, Stephen?
So the mortgage rates tend to follow the 10-year Treasury yield. And those move in lockstep with one another. There's a spread between those, meaning a gap and a premium to mortgage rates. Those are higher than the 10-year Treasury yield. But that has the ability to grow and shrink, and it has been shrinking, which is one of the reasons that mortgage rates have come down from their high back in January. So we went from over 7% now down to closer to about 6.25% today. And that's been great for people who do want to get into the housing market or refinance. And we've seen more activity, which is good. But without the 10-year Treasury meaningfully falling, mortgage rates are not necessarily going to fall much further. That spread that has shrunk a little bit isn't likely to shrink a whole lot more. So until the 10-year Treasury comes down, that tends to respond to inflation expectations and overall economic conditions. We're going to see a pretty sticky mortgage rate going forward. I think the biggest thing that's going to move that down is if we see inflation start to come down from where it is now, around 3%, closer to the 2% target.
Yeah, take me through that again. Maybe I missed it, but who determines the 10-year Treasury rate?
The bond market. So this isn't any one policy decision that mandates what the 10-year Treasury is going to be. This is something that is, you know, somewhat consensus amongst bond buyers out in the market. Those buying and selling the 10-year Treasuries, as well as, you know, companies themselves introducing debt, a lot of which we've seen is coming from technology companies who are trying to do big AI buildouts. As more debt comes into the market of all kinds, all terms and all types, the more debt there is, the more there is to be bought. And yields overall have to be higher to entice buyers to buy them. And more buying is the only thing that's going to push down yields.
So bottom line, who does this benefit, this cut yesterday?
You know, ideally, this is going to be something that makes it easier for borrowing, both for people, individuals, families, households,
what
as well as companies.
What kind of borrowing?
Borrowing from, from the bank, but also for companies borrowing. And ideally, when borrowing is easier and companies can more easily fund their operations, they may be more incentivized to hire. What the Federal Reserve really wants to do is support the labor market more than try to reduce inflation at this point, given the last few cuts. And improving the labor market conditions, improved hiring, which is very, very slow at this point, would ultimately be their goal. If we see better hiring and we see a little bit of a surge in labor market activity next year, then the Fed will have, in my mind, they would have succeeded. But we're going to have to wait and see whether that happens or not.
Thank you, Stephen. Very informative. Stephen Cates, Bankrate financial analyst, will talk with David Schultz about the Republicans and their health care plan. Also, Tim Peterson, medical director for the Blood Center, when we come back. In Texas at 504-260-1870, our survey this morning surveying the audience. Who is, in your opinion, the best Saturday Night Live cast member ever? The votes are pouring in. Send yours in at 504-260-1870. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. But you know, a fun fact is that the sun is already set at the earliest this year that it's gonna on December 1st. Because even though the solstice is the 21st, the sun's gonna go down later, but it comes up later. Anyway, no. Right, exactly. Yeah. All right, let's talk to Dr. Tim Peterson, medical director for the Blood Center, about blood donors always needed. Good morning, Dr. Tim. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Thank you all for having us on.
Thanks for taking the time. Tell me what's going on at the Blood Center.
Well, you know, it's always a difficult time of the year. It's kind of a triple whammy right now. We have a lot of our high schools and colleges are going to be going out for winter break. Additionally, there is, of course, the holiday season itself, where we always have, unfortunately, incidents of trauma with car wrecks and such. That's always going to affect the blood supply. But also, most people don't realize, after Thanksgiving, many, many, many people have elective surgeries. You know, no one wants to get that extra deductible at the beginning of the year. And so a lot, usually 2 to 3 times the amount of surgical specimens the pathology department at a hospital would receive. And of course, with many elective surgeries, there's also blood use. And there's always the continued regular use by patients who are undergoing chemotherapy and radiation therapy. They require enormous amounts of blood and blood components to maintain and become healthy again.
So how does somebody go about donating?
The best thing to do is contact the Blood Center at thebloodcenter.org, thebloodcenter.org, or 1-800-86-BLOOD. Either way, we can help arrange for individual donations. We can arrange for blood drives to be held at church groups, community groups, or businesses. Of course, we bring everything with us when we come and make sure it's as easy and efficient as can be for our businesses. Of course, it's a tough time for them, too. So, but please, we try to make it as convenient as possible. It's been said that people don't donate. When you ask them why, they say because no one's ever asked them. Well, this is one of the few times where during the holiday season, you can give your a little bit of your own time, about an hour, and really affect the lifetime of the patient that needs it.
Tell me how far that pint of blood goes, Doc.
Well, each donation we get from a pint, we're able to break it up into three components. Red blood cells, which carry oxygen, the most used product, platelets, which prevent or help prevent bleeding in patients who are low in platelets, and also plasma, which contains the clotting factors that work with platelets to prevent excessive bleeding in patients who are low.
So who is precluded from donating?
Well, there aren't a whole lot of things that would keep someone from donating. I think the biggest thing we see nowadays is patients who are taking Propecia for hair replacement or Proscar for their prostate enlargement. Patients taking a drug called finasteride. That can be very dangerous if it's in a blood component and it were to go to a woman who's carrying a young fetus. That can cause deformities. There are a handful of medications, but mostly it would be medical conditions that might affect the donor, and we don't want anything to happen to our generous donors.
Absolutely not. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Go to thebloodcenter.org, correct?
Correct, sir.
All right. Appreciate it, Dr. Tim. Dr. Tim Peterson, Medical Center for the Director, rather, for the Blood Center. Give the gift of life. That's what you can give this holiday season. A pint of your blood's going to go a long way. We'll talk about healthcare when we come back. WWL. 6:47, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Quickly to David Schultz, Professor of Political Science at Hamline University. How you doing, David?
I am doing very well, and I hope you are well.
I am, sir. What's going on with healthcare in Washington? Because it seems about it seems like it's all about not letting the other side win, as opposed to legitimately finding a problem to healthcare delivery in this country.
I think you're right. I think both sides are poking their fingers in each other's eye and not solving a problem. And the there's lots of problems with our healthcare delivery system. There's no question. But the short term problem is the fact that, as many listeners are probably realizing when they're looking at their bills for next year, healthcare costs are going up. I mean, in most cases, double digits at this point. And what we need to have is a fix, you know, to the rising healthcare insurance premiums. Now, there's a longer debate regarding what to do for that. But the short-term way of solving it for the last 15 years or so has been to do what? It's to provide the subsidies for people to be able to afford their healthcare insurance.
So and are these Obamacare subsidies, or are these subsidies that were instituted after COVID?
These were primarily from the Obamacare. But basically, what Obamacare said is that everybody should have insurance in this country, which is a great idea, because if you're not insured, the costs of health care are dramatically higher. And if you don't have health insurance, what happens is the rest of us who do have health insurance essentially pay for you. So the costs don't disappear; they just get shifted away to the rest. So the idea was that we're going to require everybody to have health insurance. If you can't afford the health insurance, we're going to either provide it for free or subsidize it based upon a sliding scale of your income, kind of like a means-tested process. In terms of improving access to health care, that is, in terms of getting more people insured, it worked. Now, did it address the cost of health care, like overall? No, but it made it possible for more people, millions of more people, to be able to afford health care insurance. Well, essentially, the big, beautiful bill took away those subsidies. And so now what we're seeing is that as we're going into, you know, next year, and it's the open enrollment periods, is that people are seeing the cost of their insurance go up. Now, some of it is beyond the issue of not having the subsidies, but to a large extent, the subsidies would still make it affordable for people to be able to buy and get the insurance. And so the big, beautiful bill got rid of the subsidies, and we have nothing in place. And so if by the end of this month a fix doesn't occur, we're going to have and listeners can call in and talk about how much they're seeing their insurance premiums go up for next year. They're going to go up. And for a lot of people, they're not going to be able to afford their health care insurance.
Let me take a break. Here's what I don't get. It seems like because it's Obamacare, the Republicans are automatically against it, so they did away with it. But yet they realized that something needed to be done, so now they're going to revisit it. But they don't want to call it Obamacare, so they want to call it their own plan. Bill Cassidy wants to give money to people, which I never heard of Republicans wanting to give money to people, but he does, and that's what they want to do. But not an Obamacare subsidy. Instead, I'll give you the cash and you can do what you want with it. And instead of giving it to the greedy insurance companies, and I'm paraphrasing the president there, but it seems as though that you're going to wind up giving it to the insurance company anyway. I'm thoroughly confused. 651, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to David Schultz, professor of political science at Hamline University, about Republicans and their health care plan. But I tell you before the break, David, I'm confused because they had Obamacare, then it was the Affordable Care Act. Obama owns that title. He says he doesn't mind it at all because he's proud of it. Everybody was against this. I lived this. I went through all of this 15 years ago, and people 16 years ago. People hated it. But they hated Obama, but they loved the fact that there was no limit on coverage, that there was no upper limit, right, that you keep your 26-year-old kid on your policy and that you couldn't be denied for pre-existing conditions. Now they also love the subsidies, but the Republicans politically can't admit that this is a good idea, so they have to rebrand it somehow or reinvent it somehow. But if they're handing out checks, is that a Republican thing?
Well, first off, the whole concept of Obamacare, let's walk it even back further, was based upon a plan in Massachusetts by Mitt Romney, who came up with the idea for it when the Republicans came up with an alternative for subsidies like this in response to Bill Clinton. So really, the Obamacare is...
Clinton had subsidies. Mitt Romney says, So
Clinton had an idea that the Republicans said, no, we don't like that idea. Let's come up with an idea instead of doing what's called managed care and all very complex process for moving things around in terms of like incentives for cutting expenses. Let's come up with an idea to just to insure more people with subsidies, which Mitt Romney then adopted in Massachusetts, which then Barack Obama adopted. So the whole idea of the subsidies to make it possible for people to buy health care insurance really is originally from over 30 years ago, a Republican idea. So that was the irony when Obamacare was being debated, that Obama is basically saying, well, I'm introducing an idea that you Republicans came up with as an alternative to Bill Clinton's health care or Hillary Clinton's health care proposals, you know, back in the 1990s. So none of them voted for it. And now it's been going on for 15 years or something. And there's problems, but there's no perfect plan out there at this point, you know, but it has made it possible for about 12 million more people in the United States to get health care insurance. Like you pointed out, people who are in their early 20s can be on their parents' plan. You can't be denied for pre-existing coverage. So the irony is they're now opposing an idea, not just because it was by Obama, but opposing an idea that they originally embraced 30 years ago.
Crazy. Thank you, sir. I appreciate your time. Dusty Johnson, South Dakota. Healthcare is unbelievably complicated. You got that right, Cap. -47 degrees if you average the temperatures throughout the...
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3-month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
The area is going up to about 60-something today, and then it really does get cold. It warms up, then it gets really cold next week. Eugene Green joins us now, New Orleans City Council member, to talk about homelessness in the area. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Good morning, Tommy. Good morning to you and to your listeners. It's a great opportunity to talk to you.
Thanks for taking the time. Let's talk about homelessness in New Orleans. What are you hearing? What are you seeing?
Well, I see because I attend many of the homeless encampment cleanups and also closures such as the one that took place recently under the Carrollton Interchange. And what I see is a system that is a situation that's going to be always very difficult for the city to overcome. My observations are that many of the people that you see on the streets and who are homeless in New Orleans have come from other locations. It's easy because, of course, they're free to do so. But what we see is people choosing to come to New Orleans because we have significant services, whether it be availability of food banks, whether it be covered shelters such as the Carrollton overpass, the Claiborne Avenue overpass, the Chapultepec overpass, the other areas near the Superdome where there were encampments. It's easy to stay there. And because we have services and we have so many generous people who sometimes are very motivated by the right thing, but are kind of misguided as to the long-term effect of their generosity. We have a lot of situations in New Orleans where we have a lot of people who come from other places. And I want our residents and also those who are not residents but see what's going on in New Orleans to know that when you see someone who is homeless living on the streets, it's not because New Orleans has chosen to be incompetent. It's not because we're ignoring it. It's because it's an overwhelming situation. And many of those people have been put into apartments. We've relocated over 1,400 people in the last year plus. At the end of the day, they're in apartments. But it's very costly to do so, and I think that you'll see, as you saw during the Super Bowl, that even if you create a transition center and it provides services and the like, there are still going to be people who leave it and choose to live on the streets.
Is it getting worse, Councilmember?
Well, the numbers suggest that we are doing a good job in getting more people inside so that there are more people who are inside than in the past, especially in the last couple of years. But the reality is, without me saying it's being worse, the captain of the 8th District reported the other day, that's the French Quarter, based on what he says, that if we cleaned up the French Quarter tomorrow and there were no homeless people, he feels that within 3 months there would be a return. And I'm using his words that we would be basically pressured again because there'd be so many numbers. It's important to recognize that we're a welcoming city. The weather is fine. You talked about the weather today compared to places in the Northeast where it's 30 degrees or 20 degrees, we always have comfortable temperatures here. We have many activities. We have people who are generous. At the end of the day, we provide so many services. We even have needle exchanges here on every Tuesday in the Central Business District. At the end of the day, there's a lot that goes on in our city that makes it such that people want to come here. But I do want to say this, Tommy, because I know that the other day that you probably heard this discussion, I'm asking the state to get involved. We have other parishes that are bringing people here to New Orleans because they don't have the services. They drop them off at the port of embarkation. They drop them off at the Ozanam Inn. They drop them off in different places because they can't do anything with them. Well, unfortunately, that becomes an unsustainable burden on the city of New Orleans. There needs to be more collaboration. There needs to be more regional cooperation. It's not that the city of New Orleans is incompetent, that we have so many people and other parishes around us don't have them. It's because we provide the services. And at the end of the day, we're going to need some help from the state.
But you can't, New Orleans can't take care of the homeless of the state or of the country, especially with the budget problems that we have, right?
Well, there are many pressures on our budget, urban budget. The activities that we have, that we provide police for which we have no say-so over the leases that are going to be established. For example, the Superdome and the Convention Center are owned by the state. But when something goes wrong, it's New Orleans police responding. It's the emergency medical services responding. Sometimes just the coroner responding. Yes, there are a lot of pressures on our budget. And there are some things that really aren't fair that are placed on the city of New Orleans that involve regional issues. I'm just asking that we get involved and have a serious and pointed discussion with regards to the state as to what are we going to do about the fact that other parishes encourage those who are unhoused and those who don't have resources in other places to come to New Orleans. Yes, it is a pressure on our budget and a pressure on our taxpayers and also a pressure on some of our residents and businesses. We have a business that's considering going out of business in Gentilly at the near the corner of Press Drive and Chef because a former Walgreens, which we're trying to get leased to someone else, the Walgreens is trying to do so, has become the home to people who are defecating and the urinating in public and doing things in public that we wouldn't be doing in public except for the fact that they're there. And they see tents. There was somebody sleeping on the Walgreens at the corner of Chef and Press not so long ago, a couple of days ago, we reported it, and somebody brought a tent to them. But at the end of the day, that's not the solution. No. People need to also recognize that their generosity sometimes is not the best placed effort.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking about homelessness in New Orleans with Councilmember Eugene Green, 721 Traffic Now, WWL. 7:26 and a half, couple minutes left with Councilmember Eugene Green. So, Councilmember, so they built this facility on France Road, right, after the along the Industrial Canal for the Super Bowl to get people off of the streets. Is that facility still open or not?
3 months. It was only open during the time of the Super Bowl and during a period of time before and after it. But it was an example of how difficult the issue is. $15 to $17 million was spent providing a facility that had health care, mental health services, food, climate control, and the shelter itself. And the problem is that it then went away. It was a state decision to create it on land that the state technically owns along the Industrial Canal. Everything along navigable waterways is owned by the state and then leased by the port, leased through the port. And it may have worked for a while because people were inside. Now, some people still left, even with the conveniences. They went down the street and were living under the overpass at France Road or living behind the gas station at Louisa and Chef. There are some people who are not prone to live inside for a variety of reasons, mental health and having access to some of the things that they want, which are drugs and not wanting to take orders. It lasted for a while, but then it was gone. But it emphasized how difficult the problem is because the problem wasn't solved. And it's important to recognize that the solving of the problem is a lot more complex than just providing a temporary shelter or just letting people live in certain situations. Tommy, I could talk to you about the issue for a half hour. I just want people to recognize that there are over 1,000 unhoused people in New Orleans. They either live in the New Orleans Mission, the Ozanam Inn, Odyssey House, or other facilities such as that, and some live on the streets. We've been working to get those who are on the streets off the streets and into apartments, but that's expensive. You have to pay rent to someone. You have to pay for the wraparound services, which is food, it's utilities and the like. It is a burden on the city of New Orleans budget, but it is something that we are doing. But I just want people to know, including the state, that the city is going to need help with this because the population can grow at any time. We're going to see more people come in for Mardi Gras, and they simply choose to stay in New Orleans, and they're going to live on the streets of the French Quarter, or they're going to go to Crescent Park. I can tell you everywhere that they're going to go, and we're going to have to go and tell them that they can't stay. On Wednesday of next week, I'll be at an encampment cleanup where someone has created a shelter using wooden pallets, and they are using fire inside to keep warm.
And that's what I was getting,
a mental health issue.
I was getting ready to tell you that, ask you that, because first of all, you don't want anybody to be miserable. They're human beings, right? But by the same token, you don't have the right to create a fire hazard that can cause millions of dollars in damage to roadways.
And it's been doing that. I mean, yeah. People, unfortunately, there have been fires under I-610. There have been fires at the Carrollton Interchange. There have been fires on the 100 Train Expressway. Yes. So I'm just trying to say that's a negative side. That the positive side is that every week in our city, many times every day, the Department of Sanitation with the police, with homeless services and strategies and the like, is cleaning up encampments and is helping people. I just want people to recognize that it's not incompetence that has people on the streets still. There's a variety of reasons for that, and we're going to ask for everyone's help in that regard.
Thank you, Councilman. Appreciate your time, as always. We'll talk to Greg Upton, about the outlook for 2026 when it comes to offshore energy and more. Right now, time for WWL First News. For that, we go to our news director, one David J. Cohen. David C. Cohen? David something Cohen. 7:45, quarter till 8, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Average of temperatures in the area, about 50 degrees, going up to 63 today. 73 tomorrow and Saturday, then cooler on Sunday, highs of only 61. Cold on Monday, highs of only 48. And maybe a chance for a freeze Sunday night, Monday morning, then highs of 61 Tuesday. Then we get back to the mid-70s by next weekend, but for the most part, dry. Greg Upton joins us now, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. How you doing, Greg?
Good morning, Tommy. Doing great.
Before we get into the 2026 Gulf Energy Outlook, let's talk about 2025 and what happened with the lease sale and the bids and all of that stuff that happened.
Yeah, sure. So yesterday we had our first lease sale since 2023. And so that was for offshore oil and gas leasing. And it actually occurred in New Orleans. There was a physical event. I was able to attend an event on Tuesday with a bunch of government as well as industry folks, and it was really an exciting time for the industry. There's been a lot of uncertainty around whether offshore leasing would continue. Of course, if you go back to the prior Biden administration, we had the executive order on tackling the climate crisis at home and abroad that put a halt to offshore leasing as well as offshore permitting for some time. There was the negotiation with the Inflation Reduction Act that continued that offshore leasing. But a lot of folks in the industry were kind of arguing that it was not happening at the pace that they would like. And, of course, now you have the new Trump administration coming in, and it's kind of all systems go. And so that lease sale was this week, and it was successful. It was a good number. I don't remember the exact number offhand. I could go look it up for you, but it was successful. It was a strong lease sale, and there was a lot of excitement around it.
So what I'm confused with is how can there be such capital investment with such a political uncertainty?
So this was actually really the core of our energy outlook this year and kind of the core theme. And whenever we talked with our industry partners, that's really what we heard across the board. And, you know, I'll give you some examples. Of course, we just talked about the offshore leasing that occurred with the Biden administration and then now with the new Trump administration. But on the flip side, we could talk about offshore wind permitting. And so when the, of course, a priority of the Biden administration was doing offshore wind. And then when the Trump administration came in January, they had the memorandum temporarily withdrawing all U.S. OCS areas from offshore wind leasing and freezing new or renewed federal approvals for wind projects pending this permitting review. And we could talk also about LNG export as another example, where, of course, you had the Biden administration paused permits for LNG export. When Russia invaded Ukraine, there was a pivot in that policy, and some of those permits were approved. And now the Trump administration's come in and is, again, fast-tracking those LNG export permits. Another example is tax credits. So we had the Inflation Reduction Act that was passed, and we had tax credits for wind and solar, and there were other tax credits as well for carbon sequestration and other things in there. But now we have the new Trump administration come in. They passed the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, and in that they prematurely sunset those tax credits. And you know,
what do you mean prematurely? Tell me about that, Greg. Prematurely sunset the tax credits.
So historically, when Congress would pass tax credits, let's say it was a 10-year tax credit, at the end of that 10-year period, of course, there would be a robust debate, as there should be, as of whether that should be continued. But what had happened for the first time is that Congress had passed the tax credits in the Inflation Reduction Act, and then a few years later with the One Big Beautiful Bill Act, those tax credits were then sunset before the initial date that was listed in the IRA. And, you know, a lot of folks from industry told me, they're like, Greg, this is, you know, you could like wind and solar, you can like oil and gas, but if you cannot plan on the regulatory regime being persistent across administrations, this makes it really hard to plan for capital investment. And this, so
yeah, it sounds,
no, you're right on.
It sounds to me like we had a contract. Okay, yeah, I'm going to invest this amount of money for this amount of tax credits for this amount of time. But then you unilaterally change the contract, and now I'm stuck holding whatever it is I'm holding. Is that inaccurate?
So I would soften it a little bit in that if you had built a wind or solar project, you're going to continue to receive the tax credit for the duration that you are eligible for. But let's say that you were planning projects and you had invested money in the planning of those projects based upon the timeline of the tax credits being available, mm-hmm. that would really be the instance where, you know, where you could be negatively impacted.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Greg Upton, 750, 10 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:57, couple of minutes left with Greg Upton, director of LSU Center for Energy Institute. Tell me about natural gas and what the outlook is for that.
Yeah, so natural gas, we've had the Haynesville been booming for about a decade now, and of course it's had its little ups and downs with the prices. We had the peak about a year ago, and as your listeners might know, natural gas prices as well as oil prices right now are really really relatively low. And so we've seen a little bit of reduction in the natural gas production in the Haynesville shale here in Louisiana. Regionally, though, natural gas production continues to increase. And a lot of that is driven by natural gas production that is associated with oil production. So some wells, whenever you produce oil, you also get natural gas with it. And so it's in a way, it's a byproduct of the oil production. And that sometimes can make it tough for a play that's just looking for natural gas to compete. But nonetheless, the Haynesville shale is still doing really well. And of course, the export of natural gas in the form of liquefied natural gas, or LNG export, as you might heard, has really facilitated this growth in natural gas production. And of course, we have a lot of excitement going on with LNG export right now with the Venture Global and the Woodside project that are both moving forward.
Talk about the data centers and the impact they're going to have.
Yeah, so that was another really fun thing to look at in the report this year. So a lot of folks are talking about energy demand increase. But what's interesting, when you look at the data, the demand for energy actually hasn't increased in the U.S. over the last decade or two. But what we have seen, or at least what we're starting to see now, is the share of energy coming from the electric grid. And so when you look at some of these you know, projections for data center growth, it's really, really meaningful in making sure that we've got the electric grid there to support those data centers. So, of course, we're building the Meta Data Center here in Louisiana, in Richland Parish, and two combined cycle natural gas plants are being built alongside it.
Thank you, Greg. I appreciate your time as always. Greg Upton, director of LSU's Center for Energy Studies. We're going to take a break. We come back, talk to Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission, about the DA's office and his conviction rate. Then we'll talk to Alex Hammerstone, director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec, about staying safe and protecting yourself financially this holiday season. You can text us 260-1870. I'm expanding it. Your favorite SNL member and character. It is 8:15 now. We're joined by Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. How you doing, Rafael? How you doing, Rafael? We hadn't spoken to you in a while. Orchestra.
I know. It's great to be back with you. I hope you're doing well.
I am, sir. And you too. You as well. The orchestra was a little wound up there. They didn't want to settle down. Let's talk about what it is that you found as far as the DA's office goes.
Well, I mean, so this is more than just the DA's office. So what we've done is we've applied a common metric to police and prosecutors. We've experienced crime reductions over the last couple of years. And if it were so simple as to say that all we need to do to reduce crime is to arrest people, we wouldn't need a prosecutor's office. So the fact that crime has gone down is a reflection on the good work done by the New Orleans Police Department and the good work done by the New Orleans District Attorney's Office. So we provide a shared metric because police normally measure their success by the crime rate or the numbers of arrests that they make. Prosecutors measure their success by their conviction rate. And they don't talk about the fact that they may decline for prosecution 40 to 50% of all of the arrests that are made, and they may dismiss another 10 or 12% of the cases. So there's been national studies that take a look at arrest to convictions. The national rate is about 54%. Mm-hmm. And that reflects on, to get that conviction, it means there has to be a sound investigation by the police department and a sound prosecution by the district attorney's office. The only way to keep crime down is to identify and arrest the violent or repeat offenders and impose a consequence on them. The consequence can't be imposed without the prosecutor's office. So the reductions in crime that we've experienced over the last couple of years, I think, is a reflection of the good coordination and cooperation and communication between police and prosecutors. So this report tracked 13,000 cases that went through the system between 2022 and 2024. And what we found is that reported crime was actually going down and arrests were going up. Well, how could that be the case? If crime is down, why are arrests higher? Well, the reason that arrests were higher is we have an understaffed police department. And when crime was exploding in 20 and 21 and into 22, there was too few officers to respond to those calls for service. They were getting there late. They didn't have time to conduct thorough investigations because they're constantly receiving new complaints and new investigations, and they weren't getting to everything. The offenders weren't being arrested. They weren't being held accountable. Conversely, in 2021, it was the first year of the Jason Williams administration in the DA's office. That was 2021. That was a COVID year. And the system was largely shut down. But even more importantly, it was his first year as a prosecutor. He had never been a prosecutor before. And he went into office with a mindset of being defendant-centric. He had some policies that he was never going to prosecute juveniles as adults, never going to impose material witness warrants, and never use the habitual offender statute. And he quickly realized that that wasn't a sound approach as a prosecutor. So what we are documenting in this report that we released yesterday is that we've seen the police department and the district attorney's office drive down crime by improving the arrest to conviction rate in each of the last 3 years, 22, 23, and 24. And as I pointed out, we're talking about nationally, the standard is 54%. In 2022, the conviction rate was 20% for felony arrests. Not very good. 2023, it improved slightly to about 29%. In 2024, it improved to 37%. Now, to put that in some context, in 2019, the conviction rate, felony arrest to felony conviction rate, was 44%. Keep in mind that in 2019, the DA at the time, Leon Canizero, that was his 11th year in office versus Jason Williams's second year, third year, and fourth year in office. So Jason Williams has learned what it takes to run a more effective prosecutor's office. They've increased their coordination and relationship with the police department. There's feedback back and forth now, and that's being reflected in improved conviction rates. In fact, if you look at violent felony arrests in 2024 versus 2019, Jason Williams has developed or evolved to the point that they're actually exceeding the violent felony conviction rates of 2019. And the same applies to property conviction rates versus 2019. So I think that it's a message of hope. This is a message of improvement. And this is a standard of applying a common metric to measure the success, the combined success of the police department and DA's office.
828, Tommy Tucker, WWL. A couple of minutes left with Rafael Goyeneche, president of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. Rafael, one question I had is that, you know, the criminal justice system is a three-legged stool. Where do the roles of the judges and criminal courts fall into this with conviction rates and unanimous verdicts, et cetera?
So
you open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it going to be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-through burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift. Literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you, so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you, and everyone on your list, at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores, or DSW.com.
Listen up, football fans, you won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. It's about getting the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. And to find candidates who match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. Stop struggling to get your job post even seen on other sites. Give your job the best chance to be seen with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. They help you stand out and hire quality candidates who can drive the results you need. Sponsored Jobs boost your post for quality candidates so you can reach the exact people you want faster. Join the 1.6 million companies that sponsor their jobs with Indeed. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speeds low after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Oh, the, you know, police have to arrest. Prosecutors obviously prosecute. Judges enforce the laws in the court, make sure everyone's playing by the rules, and they sentence. That's their, that's the three legs of the thing. So, you know, we issued a report on the judiciary and their docket management and how efficient the judges were in late spring. So this is the other side of the coin. We took a look at the judiciary. We issued that report. Based on our judicial report, one of the underperforming judges abruptly stepped away from the bench and abruptly retired. And the Supreme Court appointed an ad hoc to administer that docket. That had been over 500 open cases since that ad hoc judge was appointed. The docket has been reduced to about 230 some odd cases. So this report we just released on police and prosecutors is meant to share with the public the combined performance of the police department and district attorney's office. It adds to the public's appreciation and knowledge of the criminal justice system and why we're experiencing some of the crime reductions we've enjoyed over the last couple of years.
Thank you, Ralphie. Appreciate your time. Any final thoughts?
No. So we're going to continue to issue updates and appreciate the opportunity to come talk to you and your audience.
Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again soon. Ralphie Ogoyinache, President of the Metropolitan Crime Commission. We'll take a break, talk to Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. Try to keep you safe financially this holiday season from any kind of fraud. And you can also text in. It's changed the paradigm here. I hate to use that phrase because it's cliche, but it's true. Now that I opened it up to favorite SNL cast members and characters, well, suddenly the whole parameters have changed. Now I'm getting a lot of texts that I would not have gotten before because people know the characters, but they don't know the cast member's name. We'll be back. Time now, WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 8:46, 14 till 9, Tommy Tucker, WWL. You think the flu is going around, nothing like the scams that are going around during this holiday season here to try to keep you safe, as we always do. Our guest, Alex Hammerstone, a director of advisory solutions for Trusted Sec. How you doing, Alex?
I'm doing well. We've got tons of snow here in Cleveland, though, I'll tell you.
Good for you. Man, I tell you what, I'm hoping. We had a blizzard here in January. I don't know if you remember reading about it in the news or not, because certainly you didn't experience, or maybe, you know, snow somewhere else in Cleveland doesn't really get you. Snow someplace else other than Cleveland doesn't really get your attention. But either way, we had snow, and I'm predicting it's going to happen again at Christmas this year, but I'm no meteorologist. Tell me about the scams that are going around.
So scams are, you know, a year-round thing, but, you know, the holidays, they really ramp up. And really we see this, really a lot of the similar scams throughout the year. But if you think about it, there are billions of packages that are going to be shipped, right? So you're going to see a lot of scams that are related to shipping and packages and things like that. We're all probably pretty used to getting these text messages that purport to be from a retailer that say we have a package, or from a shipper saying we have a package, and they want you to click on, you know, whatever they're sending you, and they'll ask you for more information and steal your identity that way. You know, also with a lot of the online shopping, seeing a ton of scams there too. When you're purchasing things online, they can really take a number of forms. One is, you know, you'll go to purchase an item and just never receive it, right? They'll just take your money. You know, other times you may purchase an item and receive something counterfeit. And then kind of the third one is kind of a combination where you may purchase something, give your payment information, never receive the item, and also they'll steal your credit card and charge a bunch of charges or your bank information from there. So really the scammers are out in force this holiday season.
I got a text just now that popped up from somebody purporting to be from Amazon with a tremendous opportunity for me. I guess that's a combination of the old job scam with Amazon, since people are thinking about holiday season.
Absolutely. So a lot of companies are hiring for the holidays, right? Especially anybody that ships. And a lot of people seek out gig work. And so there are a lot of scams around that too. And those can take a number of forms as well. So they may offer you some kind of job opportunity, which is really just a ploy to collect your personal information. It's also common that they'll ask you for some kind of payment, whether it's to buy the equipment that you need for this, fake job. And of course, that way they might just take the money you send them, or they might use that payment information to charge a bunch of charges. So they have a very good holiday and you don't.
What should people be aware of when they get calls for?
So really, we're at the point now where I hate to say it, but really anything on the phone, just hang up, right? We're at the point now where we can pretty much ignore just about any phone call we're getting. We're seeing a lot of other types of scams, whether it's saying you missed jury duty or you have a warrant or you have a debt. The thing is, if you have a warrant, if you have jury duty, if you have debt, you will get a letter in the mail. So when people are calling, most of these organizations don't call you with legitimate, issues. The other thing is, I think we all wish customer service was better, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of these big retailers, we'd love to be able to kind of have our problem solved easily, but, we just don't. And so the fact of the matter is, they're not going to call you with a problem. It's difficult enough if you have a legitimate issue to get someone on the
minute.
Phone or
that,
someone else.
That is the best thing I have heard, the most common sense thing I have heard ever. You need to start that over, Alex, and say that again, because I think that is solid gold. Go ahead.
Well, absolutely. And as I said, because we've all had issues, with a purchase or something like that, and it's impossible to get help, right? You get kind of lost in the
representative.
Never-ending, right?
Representative. Representative. Go ahead.
Well, that would be lucky to even be on the phone, right? Because usually there's no phone number, and you're talking to some AI agent online.
Right.
So the point is it's almost impossible to get customer service from a lot of these large organizations.
Go ahead.
They would call.
They're going to call you and say, look, I know you've been on hold for an hour and a half, but we just wanted to tell you that there's a problem with your package. So could you call us back, please? And just by giving us y'all remember that. If you remember nothing else from today, remember that. Remember the problems you have with customer service, all due respect to everybody, and to think that somebody's going to call you with a shipping problem when you can't even get a hold of them to get your problem resolved. We'll take a break, pick it back. That's amazing to me to hear that said. It makes so much sense. Alex Hammerstone, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. We'll pick it up when we come back, 8:51, 9 till 9. Traffic now, WWL. 8:56 and a half, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Alex Hammerstone, our friend, Director of Advisory Solutions for Trusted Sec. I'm going to repeat this one more time because I think it's solid gold. If you get a text from somebody or a phone call that says there's a problem with your delivery and they need your information, remember what Alex just said. You can be on hold for 20 minutes, and I added in screaming, representative, representative, and get nowhere. So what universe is a company going to call you and say, hi, we're trying to help. Can you please give us your credit card number so we can sort this out? Come on. Really? And a lot of times, Alex, what that comes down to is if it's too good to be true, it is.
That is advice that's been true for centuries.
Tell me about ways to keep your stuff safe online if you do some shopping or you have passwords, et cetera, and those kind of things.
So a few things. One is, people still reuse the same password for multiple sites. So that is something that leads to a lot of compromises and issues. So especially for anything that has financial information, use a unique password that you're only using for that site. Also use multi-factor authentication. So that's the thing where you get texted a code or have an app on your phone. So even if someone knows your username and password, they can't get into your account. The biggest piece of advice, though, that I give everyone is use a credit card. It's a separate conversation around financial responsibility, but as far as the protections that are offered from scams and, if it's an unauthorized charge from credit cards, are really unbelievable. And so really understand your cardholder agreement, but it's just much easier to get your money back or have a dispute if you're using a credit card versus a debit card. So that's one huge way to protect yourself. And then really be skeptical. I love people. I enjoy getting to know people, but unfortunately, there are a lot of people.
That's your first mistake.
Yeah, there's a lot of people out there that unfortunately are out to take your money. Mm-hmm. So just be skeptical of phone calls, and especially anything unsolicited and unexpected.
Somebody texts it in and wants to know about messages that are left, and it seems like it might be legitimate from their insurance company. They don't know whether they should call back or not. Will a scamming service generally leave a message or not?
They may if you have an agent, but really in those cases, the best thing to do is look at your bill or look at anything that you've received from them and call the number on that bill. It's more likely that it's a scam, but just call the number that you know is a good number on that bill. Never just reply to the text or never call back the number that's left as a message.
I know the one that I've been getting a lot lately is about they need to talk to me about my reverse mortgage. I don't have a reverse mortgage. And they've been leaving a message, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything, right?
That's how they get you, right? Because you and I don't have one, but no. If they make 1,000 calls, they'll get a few people that do who will then call them back.
Gotcha. Thank you, Alex. Appreciate it as always. Man, that's gold advice. You can't get through to customer service, so what makes you think they're going to call you? We'll talk to Deuce McAllister about the Saints. We come back, WWL. And then, of course, our guest here is Christy Trail, the executive director of the Pontchartrain Conservancy, to talk about their annual plan, and you can comment on it if you like. Christy, thank you for tolerating our foolishness, but it's the holidays, right?
It is, but I'm sorry to interrupt this fun rundown memory lane of Saturday Night Live.
Did you have a favorite character or bit that they did?
Well, I'm with Dave. Why is Eddie Murphy not on the list? He's definitely, I like the old school Saturday Night Live. He was hilarious. And of course, going back to Chevy Chase and the Land Shark, that was also one of my favorites.
That Land Shark. And you know what? Bill Murray and Gilda Radner with the Nerds. I don't know if you remember them or not.
Oh, I don't know that. I remember the Nerds.
And they would give each other the noogies and all of that kind of stuff. Oh, yeah, thank you, Todd. No? Don't do anything for you? So you think that Eddie Murphy should be included?
Absolutely.
All right, here we go. Number 85, Eddie Murphy. Just wanted to get it in there officially. Tell me why you're on and what it is that you're doing. Please, Christy.
Well, good morning.
Thank you
for having me.
Thanks for coming.
I'm glad I could jump in here. You know, when you were kind of leading in, you said I wanted to talk about our annual plan, and that's a good way to describe it. The state has issued the state's coastal annual plan for review, and while it's not Pontchartrain Conservancy's plan, it is our plan in that it's every constituent in Louisiana's plan. And so here to talk about that today and see if we can get everybody involved in reviewing it.
Well, let's talk about it. Tell me how you even go about putting it together.
Well, so the state spends, time kind of compiling resources, looking at what they've done in the past, what projects have been executed. And this is basically the state putting together their list of projects that they think they can execute in the next fiscal year. You know, just as a reminder, the state's fiscal year is July 1 to July 1. So we're looking at it now here in December 2025, but preparing for a plan that will kick off on July 1, 2026. So they are, you know, in essence, kind of budgeting and looking at what projects they think they can execute starting July 1 for the following 12 months. And they look at the work that they have been doing. They also try to project what revenue is going to be coming in, how much money will they have to spend, what resources do they have. And so these are things that we look at as a nonprofit watchdog to see, is this plan following the science-based process that it's had in place for the past 20 years?
Okay. How do you go out and plan from 20 years or 20 years ahead? Because who knows? You understand what I'm asking?
Yes. I mean, this will be a long-winded answer here, so bear with me. There's kind of two concurrent planning processes, if you will. First of all, the state puts together a master plan, and that's done about every 5 to 7 years. So that's kind of the longer scale wish list of all the projects we'd like to see happen over the next, you know, as you said, 20 to 50 years. Like, here's our big long wish list. And obviously that needs to be updated periodically because, as you mentioned, things change, right? Hurricanes come, we lose land, projects are constructed, we gain land, and so they have to reevaluate that master wish list. In addition to that, each and every single year, they will then put together this is what we think we can actually execute, actually spend, and actually execute in the next 12 months in line with our master plan. And so the state has now compiled their plan of what they think they can execute and construct starting on July 1. And so keep in mind, this was just issued yesterday. We just got our hands on it. It's 140 pages long, so it's pretty lengthy. I can't say that I've read the whole thing just yet, but we are going to be taking a look at it to see if this plan for fiscal year starting on July follows similar plans that we've seen historically, where the state has really committed to following a science-based process, taking that master plan, enlisting the state's own amazing scientists and engineers, as well as scientists and engineers from around the state and around the country, in terms of what's the best ROI on these dollars to restore our coast. And historically, the plan will have about 50% of projects that are protection. Those are things like levees and flood walls and great infrastructure, and 50% restoration, so things like marsh creations. And so what we're doing now as we read this plan is to see, are we sticking to that? Is it still a 50-50 split, or are we seeing a deviation from that? And if so, just going to be curious to see why.
Is there a consensus on what some things that have definitely worked and some things that have definitely not worked?
Yes, I think our projections and modeling have definitely gotten stronger over time, right? We're learning a lot. We learn a lot about subsidence rates. We learn about where marsh creation projects are effective. We learn about areas where maybe a land bridge would work and maybe where it wouldn't, right? We've had hurricanes that have come in and changed. And so all of those things are able to tweak our modeling and projections so we can learn. And that's what's so valuable about this science-based process is we feed all of that science-based data into the plan to kick out a list of things that are really going to be the best and most effective return on investment of these dollars. And keep in mind, when the state is talking about spending $1.27 billion, that's billion with a B, over the next 12 months on some of these projects, the majority of those dollars are actually not state dollars. The majority of those dollars are coming from BP oil spill settlement dollars and from the federal government. So we've got, you know, our due diligence to make sure we spend these dollars wisely. And we've got an opportunity with some of these dollars coming in now that we will not have forever to make sure we can really get some big projects executed.
And who decides how those dollars are spent?
So that's a great question. So this plan is issued as a draft. It is open for public comments and periods. They're going to be having some meetings over the next several months to kind of show this around. It will then go to the Louisiana legislature, and it has to be voted on by four different committees in the Louisiana legislature. So it will get scrutinized at all different levels in the legislative branch of government. It then goes to the CPRA board, who then also will review the plan. And once it is passed by both the legislature and the board, it's kind of signed, sealed, and delivered for the agency to go on and start executing these projects.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up here. We come back because I got some questions for Christy Trail, our guest, our friend, executive director of the Pontchartrain Conservancy. The Louisiana's Coastal Protection and Restoration Authority released our plan for public review and comment about what you would like to see. And you can text me at 504-260-1870. Where would you like to see the dollars spent? I know one question I have when we come back is, I don't know how you can plan out 20 years when politics could change what happens between now and then. It seems like whether it's at the federal level, whether it's at the local level, whether it's about healthcare, whether it's about energy exploration, whether it's about coastal restoration, it seems like sometimes politics change long-range plans. So if you're constantly changing back and forth, are you taking one step forward and one step back, and you wind up exactly where you are? Back in a flash, WWL. 927, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Christy Trail, Executive Director of the Pontchartrain Conservancy. I said that right? Didn't seem right when I said it. Christy, so when you talk about long-range plans, and somebody texted in a very nice text and said, thanks for summing up what they were feeling, how can you plan long-range anything when things become so political? Tommy, I'll read it. It says, thanks for making my point. It's kind of useless to participate in public comment sessions when after the process is over and agreed upon, all it takes is one governor to cancel it all. It fosters a sense of hopelessness. So what about that? It seems like when especially when it comes to something like coastal restoration, you can't start, stop, start, stop, start, stop, because then you're right back where you started, or actually you're not back where you started. You're losing ground because the problems continue and you're not doing anything really to mitigate. Am I wrong here? Am I thinking crazy? What, Christy?
You are exactly right. We're losing ground and we're losing time. And I just want to encourage the person that texted in, don't give up. We need those public comments. These are elected officials. Remember that we have the choice to, you know, vote them in and vote them out. So if there's something you disagree with, making those public comments now and getting your voice heard is so important. And, you know, it is unfortunate if politics does enter this process. The intent of the state's coastal master plan and coastal annual plan is to be science-based. From my perspective, when I read that, that's objective, that's data-based, it's not political, but we have seen a shift when we look at some of the projects in here. I mean, let's just look at, for example, at the CPRA board meeting yesterday when they were rolling this out. Most of the projects they were highlighting were levees, boat launches, flood walls, locks, very little mention of marsh creation, marsh restoration, the value of all those components working together. So this is where we really need to make our voice heard, and I encourage your listeners to weigh in. They can email in comments. They can attend some of the public meetings coming up. There's one January 8th in Jefferson Parish. Make your voice heard. It's really important.
I don't know how far you've gotten through it because it just did come out yesterday. When it comes to things like Mid-Barataria sediment diversion, if, for example, the next governor says, okay, yeah, this is a go, what happens then?
Well, that would be great.
Yeah.
But, you know, I mean, we talk about 20 years. These things really do take that long. I mean, it just takes a long time to...
So I guess going to my point, Christy, I don't mean to interrupt you, but that means we're 4 years behind if another governor, well, Governor Landry could be reelected. I shouldn't say that. But if 8 years from now a governor comes in and says, no, we need the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion, or unless Governor Landry changes his mind, then we're 8 years behind, right?
You are correct. Okay. And, like, do we have the same dollars that we have now? Right now, we were, you know, out of a disaster came a gift, and we got a gift of some dollars set aside to build this diversion. 8 years from now, will we still have those dollars? Probably not. So it's starting over, and it will take.
Go ahead.
Yeah, I'm just going to say it will take a long, long time to figure all that out.
So let me get back to the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion. As a case study, a lot of science went into this, correct?
Oh, absolutely. Decades of science.
So decades of science go into this to plan. And again, science should be objective, and it should, you should have a theory and a theorem and all that stuff. And then you go and you try to disprove it to make sure that it is scientifically sound. It didn't, there was not, I mean, I didn't hear, other than people that were fishermen, a lot of controversy about this until the governor took over. I'm talking about the science of this. I'm trying to keep the politics out of it. And I say when the governor took over, I only mean that as a time marker. Was there a lot of pushback, scientific pushback from this, or was there ever a lot of scientific pushback, or was it more political?
From our perspective, it was all political.
Okay.
So just looking at the decades of science and research that went into coming up with that idea, again, always looking at that ROI, right? Like, what's the best return on investment in our dollars? Using the Mississippi River as a tool. It's a great ROI. It's a resource that we have that we can use. The science studied it for decades. And you know what else was so important over those decades of time was public input. There were so many meetings held, so many opportunities for public comment. The plan was tweaked, you know, and then it was rolled out again for more public comments. And then when it was canceled, how many opportunities for public comment were there? Zero. It was just canceled. There was no opportunity for people to kind of weigh in or comment on that. And that's really unfortunate. That is not following the process.
So, again, people can weigh in, but it's not an election. It's in terms of what's best. You can tell us what your concerns are, but then it should be science that decides what gets done, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. And, you know, scientists are publicly commenting on this thing as well. So We have Louisiana's best and brightest working on this thing. I mean, the staff at CPRA, there's an amazing group of over 150 scientists and engineers there at CPRA. They worked on this. These are graduates of our own universities from LSU, Southeastern, UL, La Tech. Like, all of our amazing scientists and engineers worked on that, including the diversion. They put their heart and soul into that. They want to see that project built. And then one day the leadership of the state just says, no, all that work that you did and all the things that you worked on, they're wrong, and I'm just not doing them. That's unfortunate.
I think that's important that you mention that, because it's not, you know, you always want to put a white hat on somebody and a black hat on somebody. You want a hero, you want a villain, you want to simplify things and distill them down so they make sense to you. Somebody texted in, dredge, baby, dredge. Well, you are not opposed to dredging, are you?
It's not an either or. Absolutely.
That's the point. That's what I'm saying. And it seems like sometimes people try to say it's all this or all that, when in fact the whole idea is to have. And the other point I wanted to make, Christy, I think that you made, that's a good one, is that these are local scientists that did this. These are not people from Michigan or the someone maybe from Michigan. There's nothing against Michigan, but you understand what I'm saying. These are people that have a dog in the hunt, right?
Yes, these are people grew up here. These are people that grew up in South Louisiana, South Central Louisiana, Southwest Louisiana. They have seen this land loss firsthand. You know, our own staff have hunting camps down there, and they see it. And so they're very invested in ensuring the best future for Louisiana, that we can continue to live here for decades and centuries to come. But unfortunately, without the Mid-Barataria sediment diversion, we are at risk of significant land loss, especially in the Barataria Basin. And as you mentioned, we all about dredging, dredge, baby, dredge all day long, but it's not an either or. And we've got to look at realistically, what is the capacity to be able to dredge our way out of this problem? Is there even enough equipment out there to accomplish what we need to accomplish? Probably not. It's something worth looking at.
And the other thing that I think is important, and I don't mean to dwell on the minor stuff here, but I think it's important as far as people forming their opinion. Because sometimes they say, well, the scientists, they're in their, you know, ivory towers and labs and coats, and they don't understand what's going on. I'm a fisherman. I'm out here. I see it. But a lot of the members of the people that work for you have camps, and they do see it, and they have seen it both from a anecdotal and also from the scientific perspective, right?
Oh, absolutely. We are out there boots on the ground every day, Tommy. Our staff is out there doing monitoring, analyzing changes in habitat. Where are we seeing growth? Where are the trees going to survive? Where are we seeing changes in water quality? We are out there every day, and we have a vested interest in it, as you said. We're taxpayers here, too. We live here. We fish here. We eat the seafood. We want to enjoy sportsman's paradise, so we want to see it thrive. I mean, I think ensuring we have the best science-based projects is the only way to do that.
So how do people comment on this, Christy?
So, again, the plan was just issued yesterday, and it's quite lengthy, as I mentioned, 140 pages. So don't feel overwhelmed by that, but that's fortunately why they have such a lengthy comment period. Comments are going to be open until February.
There's nothing on TV anyway, so you may as well read it.
There's some public meetings that will be happening in January, most notably for your listeners, January 8th in Jefferson Parish. And so comments can be made at the meeting. Comments can be emailed into CTRA. All the way up until February, and also just encourage your listeners to contact their elected officials, you know, their local elected officials, and let them know their opinion. Like, hey, I support this plan, or I have, you know, some comments about the plan, because those legislators will be voting on the plan in this coming session in the spring.
Thank you, Christy. I appreciate your time. Have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year if we don't talk to you, okay?
Thanks so much.
Happy holidays, whatever. Thank you. Okay, Christy Trail, Executive Director of the Pontchartrain Conservancy. One thing I will say is that if you feel as though your voice is not going to be heard and it's a waste of time, you got to look at the positive, what you know and what you don't know, right? So if you don't say anything, your voice will not be heard. If you do say something, it may be heard or it may not be heard, but at least there is a possibility of it being heard, as opposed to if you don't say anything, then you know nobody's going to hear what you think or care, because they will not have heard it. Deuce McAllister, when we come back, 937, 23 till 10, traffic now, WWL. 9:44, 16 till 10. It is my honor and pleasure and privilege to introduce Deuce McAllister. We all know who he is. How you doing, Deuce?
Doing well. How are you doing, sir?
I'm all right. I'm going to go to confession. I was out of town on Friday, so I watched the game and listened to the TV broadcast. It was not the same, so I didn't get to hear what you had to say, and I would love to hear what you had to say about
the
game.
Well, all is forgiven. All is forgiven,
I was
sir.
I was geo-fenced out because it wouldn't let me listen on the Odyssey app, and I couldn't get it on the radio, so there you go.
Well, I'm sure there are some technology savvy individuals that you could have called. You know, I won't say our age kind of probably held us back a little bit, but that's a different story. We will talk about that another time.
No,
okay?
But I'm telling you, because if you're out of town and you try to listen on the Odyssey app, you hear Ian Hoke saying, "I'm sorry, but you are out of the." Anyway, go ahead. What did you think about the game on Sunday?
Thought it was a good showing. It was some challenging situation when you look at it from the weather.
Wait a minute. What did you say? Our age challenges us a little? Yeah, just a bit.
I thought we were moving on from that.
No, we were, but I just it took a second for it to register. I think you're right. Sometimes our age does have a little bit. Not that we're ancient or anything, but it's just like these tech savvy things. Come on, man. What are you talking about? What after streaming services? Do you have any streaming services, Deuce?
Yes, a few of them that I pay for that I don't even use. You're correct, sir.
Don't use, and then when you try to log on to it, the damn thing is asking for your password and this and that and the other thing.
That you don't know.
Exactly. So why am I even paying for this to watch it when I got to jump through 15 different hoops? It's like, what's the football thing with the little rope y'all would dance through? You know what I'm talking about? Jumping through? I got to go through that to watch it? Screw that. Cancel a subscription.
Just cancel it, and then you still need it because whatever you thought you were going to watch then, that's the only app that it owns. So eventually you'll be back.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, whether you want to look at it then or not.
Eventually you'll be back. That should be their phrase. That should be their catchphrase. Okay, sure, cancel us now, but eventually you'll be back. Now, let's talk about
the
Saints
exactly
and what you saw. I just wanted to get back to that because I thought it was funny. Go ahead.
No problem at all. It was a challenge. And when I say it was a challenge, it was just because of what you were up against, not only playing a really good football team, but from the weather aspect of it, didn't make it any easier. And so for them to be able to go out there and come away successful, got a lot of guys that stepped up. And, you know, for this team, really, as they evaluate and try to see, hey, who can be a part of what we're trying to build going forward. I think you had a lot of young guys and older guys step up and say that they want to be a part of it. You know, and I get there's a fraction of people that think that it should be all about draft positioning and putting yourself in the best position to draft players, you know, earlier per se. But here's what you have to remember. This team is still trying to identify and figure out if they have a quarterback and guys going forward. So if you lose all of your games when Tyler is starting, you know, obviously we know the couple that he had won prior to Sunday, then does that give you the confidence that you have a quarterback that can you know, help you win games going forward into next year? I don't know if that's the case. So for them to have some success, not to saying that I'm anointing Tyler as the franchise guy, but at least it gives you confidence to say, hey, we know that we have something in the quarterback. Let's focus on position X, Y, Z now, because that one we think we have a guy, you know, and you still need to see a little bit more from him, but he's taken the right steps to show you that he can do it.
I'm just a fan, okay? I'm no Deuce McAllister, but from what I saw of the game, it made me feel as though we got us a quarterback. Thoughts?
That's possible.
Okay.
That's possible. I mean, he is doing what it takes to win games. You know, and so he'll tell you there's still mistakes. There's still things that he needs to do a little bit better. There's still things that he can clean up. But you won. That's ultimately what it's about.
What does that say about
the team? 300.
Go ahead.
No, you can put up 300 yards passing and throw for 4 touchdowns and lose. And do you say, well, you know, it wasn't the quarterback's fault or the quarterback threw 3 interceptions and that's ultimately why you lost? You know, and so you find a way to win and the quarterback plays a factor into that. You can't just deny it and say, well, his numbers weren't great. The ultimate goal is to win, and that's what you did.
For this team and the position they are and for everybody to play as hard as they did made me proud to be a Saints fan. Let me put it that way.
No, I agree with you. I agree with you. I mean, because you can look at some teams and you can look at the body language, you can look at the effort, and you can say, ah, this team or this player specifically has mailed it in. Mm-hmm. Hey, they've mailed it in. And so that is not the case with the Saints team, you know, and I may fuss and gripe about the effort, you know, on a player or two, but when you look at overall, whether it's a series or multiple drives, I think the effort is definitely there. You know, maybe the execution in what it needs to be for it to be successful, but the effort is there.
Would it be beyond the realm of possibility for the Saints? You know, I know you want to win the game, but to put Tyler Shuck in positions, maybe it might not be most advantageous to win the game, but just see what he does under these different situations and circumstances. I would, but it might be stupid.
No, I mean, any time that you get to go out and line up and play, that may be a situation that you don't get going forward. I mean, you know, they didn't call a ton of read option plays with Tyler, you know, earlier in the year. You know, when he was playing, those were plays maybe Taysom got the bulk of those situations. Now you're calling those plays with him. And so I think that's just a little different. There was a situation where in the red zone, you know, it's normally been a situation where you would put Taysom in at quarterback, or you would say, hey, you know, Tyler, we're not going to throw the football in this red zone area. You're giving him more freedom, more leeway to be able to do things that you hadn't seen him do. My complaint was, hey, first drive, first quarter, you're probably playing a little bit too conservative. First play of the game, they throw a deep ball, mm-hmm. and it should have been a pass interference, you know. And so second play of the game, they throw a deep in. Those were things that you were not seeing in the first quarter. So they are saying, hey, we trust you. We're going to call plays that we feel like not necessarily that you can't run, but normally these are plays that we've been calling after 3-4 series instead of series number one.
And that's what I'm talking about, where it's like, you know what, maybe this isn't the safest thing or the best thing, but let's see what he's got, because what about other positions, Deuce, besides quarterback, that defensive backfield perhaps? Stutzman?
Well, I think every position. Yeah, I think every position you still evaluate. You're still looking and say, hey, can we get a little better here? Is this a position that we need to draft and or bring in a free agent in? And so that's really every position, you know, across the board, just because not that you may have a need, but you always want to introduce competition. I need to be able to bring in competition now, whether that competition is a first-round player or whether that competition becomes a free agent player. Every player or every position across the board, they have to be evaluating and kind of looking at, you know, and saying, hey, we've got to get a little bit better here, whether he's a day one starter or whether he's a rotational guy.
You like our chances against the Panthers?
I like your chances. I mean, I think, you know, for the Saints, every game is an opportunity to go out there and kind of prove and show that you belong. You're going to get the best effort from the Panthers. They're coming off of a bye week. You beat them at home. They're in the race to kind of qualify for the playoffs. So just because you beat them earlier, don't think that they're going to come and lay down. And so it's going to be a tough matchup, and you've got to create some turnovers and, you know, involve that home crowd. Involve who that nation. They want to cheer for you, but you got to give them something good to cheer for.
Amen. Thank you, Deuce. I appreciate you as always. And hey, real quick, and this got nothing to do with football. I'm hitting behind the ball. What am I doing here? Do you know? Chunking it.
Your swing plane. Your plane. You're too steep, sir.
Too steep, meaning I got to flatten it out a little bit?
Well, no, you got to drop your elbow.
Okay. I'll try it. Thank you, Deuce.
No problem.
Bill me. At the Pro Shop. Deuce McAllister, WWL Saints color analyst, former Saints running back, got to tuck the elbow, right? Drop the elbow. We'll find out what Newell's got planned when we come back, WWL.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detectthesos.com today.
You know how in football, timing is everything? You miss your window by a second and the play's already gone. The holidays are the same way. Everything happens fast, and if you're not ready, you're scrambling at the last minute. That's why Amazon Prime is the real MVP this season.
With Prime's fast, free shipping, you can make those last-minute calls look effortless. Forgot your secret Santa gift? Need something for that office party? Prime's got your back, helping you go from uh-oh to all set faster than a two-minute drill.
Absolutely, Mark, because Prime isn't just about getting things fast. It's about making sure you never miss your shot. It turns that last-minute scramble into a smooth holiday win. So this season, remember, Prime's fast delivery has your back during the holidays, especially when it's down to the wire and can't wait another minute. Last-minute gifts delivered, it's on Prime. Visit Amazon.com/Prime to shop now.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
This holiday season, choose gifts that feel thoughtful and practical with Omaha Steaks. Whether you're hosting or gifting, they deliver the world's best steak experience, and it makes you look like you planned way ahead. They've got USDA-certified tender steaks, juicy burgers, comfort meals, and tons more. Gifting Omaha Steaks is honestly one of the easiest wins. Everything arrives beautifully packaged, super convenient, and the quality is unbelievable. Their filet mignons are some of the most tender I've ever had. And the variety means you can personalize every gift. Plus, orders placed by 6 p.m. Eastern ship same day. And everything is backed by their 100% guarantee. It's holiday gifting made simple. Save big on gourmet gifts and more holiday favorites with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their Sizzle All The Way sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code T-BONE at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's omahasteaks.com, code T-Bone.